Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the non-remedial math department here at Car Talk Plaza. You know, you might remember that last week we had an embarrassing call from a truck driver named Richard.
Well, it wasn't it was embarrassing.
Well, anyway, here's what...
We thought it was embarrassing, but in retrospect, it wasn't embarrassing.
Here's what went on. He's a diesel truck driver, and his gas gauge had broken, and he was using a wooden dowel to figure out how much gas he had.
He had a cylindrical tank. You know, you've seen those semis by the side of the road or when you pass them on the highway. It's a cylinder, and it's laying on its side.
Yeah.
And there's a thing on the
top. And he put the fillers in the top. He put a stick in, and he knows the diameter of the tank is 20 inches, and he knows where to put the half-full mark, obviously, at 10 inches. But his question was, where do I put... most importantly, the quarter full mark. And I know, he says, that it ain't five. And then my brother says something like, oh, this is simple.
This is trivial. And I start drawing a circle.
You want the answer right now, Richard? Can you?
Hold on a minute, I said. I can do, oops.
And then I guess then we realized that we needed to think about it for a minute. And I remember saying, this is a job for integral calculus.
Yes, and you are absolutely right.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there are lots of ways to do it. I like the solution I gave Richard, actually. Find someone with a quarter of a tank and put the stick in his thing and mark the stupid thing.
Yeah, what does your gas gauge say? Quarter? Let me just put this stick in there for a second.
And in fact, I have the answer right here, which was provided to us by Doug Mayer's niece, who's some kind of a math genius, and we hate her. But she provided both a integral calculus solution and... A solution using no calculus.
Oh, she
did. Using trigonometry.
Well, she's only one of about 1,000 people who sent us proposed answers, and many of them were correct.
But I'll tell you how we figured it out.
We actually got the right answer.
We have the right answer, yeah. And ours agrees with a lot of the other ones.
And I have to admit that left to our own, pardon the expression, devices, my brother and I would never have solved it.
No,
because we couldn't find the integral of this thing.
Couldn't find my CRC book.
Find the CRC book, but I did find the integral on the internet. The internet is wonderful.
But we did use, with the help of my son Andrew and Tommy's daughter Anna, we did use her graphing calculator to graph a circle, you know. And the nice thing about the graphing calculator is it will find the area under a curve, just like integral calculus does. And by using that, we said, find the area of the curve if the distance from the center is 3, 3.5, 4. And we finally came up with the answer that in order for his dipstick to work, he's got to be about 5.96 inches off the bottom.
Yes.
Is a quarter of a tank.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it seemed like it should have been a lot more than that. I would have guessed that a quarter would have been at 7 inches and not 6.
I would have too. And that was my guess, if you recall. I think I said 7 and 3, and it was wrong.
Yeah.
So it tells you how bad your intuition can be. Six.
Well, at least you erred on the right side.
But 6 is pretty close to 5, which is what's so interesting.
Yeah, which is what Richie wanted to do in the first place.
Exactly. But in addition to all the mathematical solutions that we got, by the way, some of them, if you're really interested in this, and I'm surprised at how many people were.
Yeah.
There's a lot of wonderful stuff at two websites. One is called mathworld.com, and the other one is mathforum.com. But we got some interesting solutions from people. They didn't use integral calculus. They used their heads.
Right.
This is the one that I like the best. Who is this guy? Tim Sierra is his name. Tim, you're a bleeding genius. He says, take a beer can. I'll paraphrase. Take a beer can. Pour it into 4 glasses so that the 4 glasses are equally high on in the
yeah,
glass.
Right.
So you've separated the can of beer into 4 equal pieces. He says, drink 3 of them. Pour the 4th one back in the can.
And tip it on its side.
Tip it on its side. And
if you could see through the metal, you would know.
If you could see through the metal, you'd know where it would go. But you could also just make a little hole in the top of it and stick a straw in it.
Right.
The equivalent of the stick.
That's
and you
right.
would know what percentage of the total height it is.
Yeah.
That was, I thought, a brilliant, if not tasty, solution to the problem.
But if you want to see other solutions, you can either go to one of these sites or you can go to our website and look at...
Yeah, we'll have all of this stuff on there. We'll have the letters.
Ad nauseum.
But it just goes to show you how what appeared to be such a simple little problem.
Remember your words like it was last week. Oh, it was.
This is true.
Oh, come on, Richard, we'll do it right.
I'll do it right here. Can you hold on a minute, I said.
Well, anyway, if you have a question about your car or anything else, anything but integral calculus, the number to call is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jessica.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Jessica.
How are you?
Good. We're great. Where are you from?
Baltimore.
Baltimore. Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
Not originally.
No.
But recently.
I didn't think so.
But recently?
Yes.
How recently?
About 4 months.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Student.
Yes.
What's in Baltimore? Like Johns Hopkins?
Johns Hopkins.
Exactly.
Yes. That's
is that where you go?
Yes, it is.
So you're a transfer from where?
From San Francisco.
Oh. So what are you majoring in, and why did you transfer, and how is your boyfriend?
Well, the drive out was good. I'm studying public health, and I used to study anthropology.
Anthropology.
Cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, now that we've gotten
all of that
background information out of the way,
okay.
What do you want?
Well, I have a 1981 Volvo, a 240 DL, and my power steering is broken, and I want to try and fix it myself, but I'm not sure if I'm underestimating the scope of this problem or something I can do.
This car made it across the country?
It did. I drove it across country with one slight repair in Illinois.
Engine rebuild, right?
And it made
practically.
So did the power steering break?
Well, actually,
here?
I'll tell you some background to this power steering problem.
Yeah.
Last May, while driving in San Francisco on the freeway, I heard a loud snap, and when I was turning off the freeway, I noticed I no longer had power steering.
Right.
So I took it in, and I had the belts and the pulley replaced.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a week ago, I was driving again on the freeway, and I didn't hear a snap, but when I turned off the freeway, I noticed again that I was without power steering.
Mm-hmm.
So this time, I popped the hood, and I looked and saw that the belts had flown off the pulleys and were other places under the hood.
Right.
And the whole power steering motor seems to have shifted, so it's no longer vertical.
It's like hanging there.
Some of the bolts, I notice, are missing, and there's a few that are hanging in there by a hair.
Oh.
So I enlisted my friend to help me, and it seemed as though we were able to kind of push the motor back into place. And I'm wondering if this job could be as easy as it seems as getting new screws to put on, or maybe something much larger is going on that's caused this to break 2 times in 7 months.
No, I suspect what's happened. You said he replaced the pulley?
He did.
Well, I don't know why he replaced the pulley, but when he did this, he did nothing else except replace the pulley and the belt, and everything was okay.
Yes.
And now that the belt has come off, obviously the pump doesn't work anymore. That thing you refer to as the motor is actually the pump.
Okay.
Right, and they're not screws, they're bolts.
Okay.
You've got to learn the nomenclature.
If you don't get the lingo right.
What about the manual labor part?
Well, what probably happened is that the bolts that hold the power steering pump in place have sheared off.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably sheared off because the bushings through which the bolts go were all worn out, so the pump was vibrating.
Mm.
And when it vibrated, it may have even vibrated so much that it vibrated the bolts loose.
Okay.
And either they fell off or they were sheared off.
Ooh.
What you need is another Volvo to copy, because you may be missing pieces.
Oh.
And I think you can do this.
Okay. Where do I go to find a...
Junkyard.
So I go and find a model, the same model?
You need to find... Yeah, I mean, don't forget, they were the same for like a couple of decades. So you need to find one about the same vintage, and you'll open the hood and you'll say, that looks like mine, except it has all these extra pieces that I don't have.
And you say, I would like to buy all those pieces. And they'll give them to you for $10.
Okay.
And then if you can remember where they went, you can then take all the... In fact, if you're lucky...
Take a camera with you.
No, if you're lucky, you can just take them off one at a time and put them on your car. You can do it out in the street.
Seriously, take a camera. If they're going to rip the pieces off the car, then it would be nice to have a picture of what they looked like before they came off.
Okay.
But alternatively, you could take it someplace, and maybe for $50 they would do this for you.
Okay.
Yeah, you could do that.
She's
on the other hand,
but it would feel so satisfying to fix.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it would be good.
Yes, and it is more meaningful if it's done in the coldest winter weather. So it's a little early yet.
I'd
wait a few more weeks.
Yeah, definitely.
We're up to our noses in snow.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
See you, Jessica. And by the way, I don't drive it too much without the power steering because it is dangerous.
Yeah, it's also very difficult.
It's difficult. You'll get strong, but you might get killed.
Okay.
See ya.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on, what's this? Car Talk.
Hi, this is Stefan from Brooklyn.
Stefan?
Yeah.
Stefan?
What's up, man?
I'm calling because the car, my car, which is the chief car for my business, which is the Unemployed Philosophers Guild.
Yeah.
It has a peculiar problem.
What kind of a car is it?
It's a Volkswagen Golf.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it actually used to cause tremendous amounts of grief. It would break down constantly. And I discovered a temporary solution to the problem, which is that I'd be driving along and suddenly black smoke would come out the back and it would stall. And then when I would pull the heat sensor out, it would start up and it would run perfectly without the heat sensor inside.
What heat sensor? The coolant temp sensor?
Yeah, the coolant temperature sensor.
The thing under the hood.
Right. So I'd pull that out and then the car starts to run fine. And then every once in a while, as I'd be cruising down the highway, it would stall. And then what I do is I leave the car in gear and I turn the engine off. And so it would just sort of coast with it in gear.
Yeah, I got it.
And then when I turn the engine back on, it runs fine. And it'll run fine for 15, 20 more minutes. And then I'll have to repeat this process. So I wonder if I'm destroying my car by doing this.
I often wonder how people come across these little tricks.
Yeah, whatever made you pull off the coolant temp sensor wire? I mean, why not some other wire?
It seemed obvious.
It seemed obvious.
It seemed obvious.
I can't explain it, but it just
Stefan,
seems
you
clear
may be a
day.
Genius.
Stefan, someone with your ability shouldn't be unemployed.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, you haven't considered replacing this coolant temp sensor.
I have. I've replaced it, and there was no difference.
Yeah.
So it isn't the coolant temperature sensor. And I brought it into Volkswagen on three separate occasions. And though when I got the car back, it was fixed for maybe a couple of days. It always reverted.
Yeah. See, my theory on this is that whenever someone comes up with this strange little cures, temporary cures like this one, like the ones you came up with, either the person is a genius or a complete wacko.
And right now, you're right on the fence.
I'm leaning toward wacko now. Although I admit, I started out thinking you were a genius.
Well, there's a very fine line.
There is.
There really is.
There may not be any line.
Right. You may have crossed back and forth three or four times already.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because I don't think either one of these things that you do has any bearing on the problem.
Oh, you're absolutely wrong. You're entirely incorrect.
Well, I mean, I don't know about the stopping the thing in gear. I can't figure that out. Pulling the coolant temp sensor wire may have something to do with something, but it may be forcing the computer to go back into some limp-in mode, which is more likely to be correct than the run mode. Okay, you need someone to.
I think that that's right.
I think that that's. Well, thank you.
I have a theory as to why turning the car off.
I knew you would.
My feeling is the problem is that there's a the gas flow is incorrect, and when I pull the coolant sensor, it changes the mix of the gas.
That's right.
Well,
that's because it puts the computer into the limp home mode.
Okay, but then when it stalls, suddenly it's burning too rich, and the engine is flooded.
Yeah.
And by leaving the engine on with the car off, it somehow cleans out the cylinders.
Okay.
You think that that's right?
Not really.
No, but, I mean, you've clearly done some thinking about this.
You have done some thinking.
And it's not bad thinking, I have to say. It's not completely wacko. Not. You have to admit, it's not completely wacko.
I want to work my way back to genius.
Well, you're still on the line.
I think you have a bad thermostat.
But that's the one that I changed already.
No, you changed the coolant temp sensor.
Oh.
Oh.
The thermostat is the thing that actually controls the temperature, and the thing that you change simply measures what the temperature is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Could it be a ground wire?
It could be a ground wire. You know, there are a bunch of little grounds that connect to the cylinder head.
Yeah.
Any one of those can cause, if it's making a bad connection, can cause a thing to run lousy.
Yeah.
But you could change, you could clean those ground wires.
Okay.
You can change the thermostat, or you can have it checked to see if, in fact, the thermostat is really opening at the right temperature. And when that doesn't work, I think the problem may be in your computer.
Yeah.
But you have to go to a different Volkswagen dealer. And I would recommend that you don't tell them anything about yourself when you go in. Yeah. Or what you've
They're
done
just
to
taking
it.
Taking advantage of me.
Well, no, it's always bad to tell them what you've done so far.
And don't mention your theories to them either.
No, because right
away. Let them figure it out right from scratch.
Yeah, we have a little code that we use at our shop. And when someone fills out a repair order, there are all kinds of little boxes like who filled out the repair order, when promised, time promised. And there's another little box that has no label. But we have various codes, and one is we use a W for wacko. When we have someone that's a wacko, we put a W in that box because no matter what you explain to them, they're not going to believe it. So you may be getting the W code.
I never gave that one any thought.
See you, Stefan.
Thank you.
Hey, good luck, man.
Thanks.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
All right, look, I know this is hopeless, but do you by any chance happen to remember our most recent puzzler?
I'll have you know that remembering the puzzler is number one on my list of New Year's resolutions.
Oh, yeah?
To break. So, no, I don't remember it. How about a hint?
Well, it involved a Morris Minor and a nasty low-pressure system. And I'll be back with the whole story in just a minute, so don't go anywhere.
I won't.
It's 55 miles to Whitehall. And then 55 more after that. And I've stalled 5 times to get this far. Think this car ain't making it back. And I've a bottle of wine on the back seat and a case of oil on the floor. I've been running on fumes, but what drives me on is your face when you'll answer the door. And you'll answer the door.
And even though the NPR fire marshal takes a cursory look at our studio and mumbles, whatever, whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
Support for the Car Talk podcast and the following message come from Colette Travel. On their small group explorations tours, you'll go deeper into a destination with an average of 15 travelers. Stay in a Tuscan villa, or embark on an African safari, combined with Colette's industry-leading tour managers, authentic cuisine, and 102 years of guided travel expertise, you can trust that the perfect travel experience is here for you. Visit Colette.com or call 855-212-2045.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the American Jewish World Service, working together for more than 30 years to build a more just and equitable world. Learn more at ajws.org.
NPR's Life Kit wants to help you make changes that actually stick this new year. From how to do dry January to how to start a creative habit, we've got new episodes all month to help you start the year off right. New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday. Listen and subscribe to Life Kit.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. And I should mention, I think I did last week as well, that the inspiration for this was sent in by a fellow named Jerry Olhaver.
Only the inspiration. And
you
obfuscated it beyond belief.
No. I hardly obfuscated, declarified at all.
Really?
Just a few little touches here and there. Anyway,
here it is. Oh, okay.
The scene was Cape Cod, late summer of 1954, the day after a hurricane had altered the landscape. Yachts and other working boats had been swept up on shore, actually, miles from the marinas. Some were actually left in fields, believe it or not. And only National Guard trucks and jeeps and big tow trucks, you know, wreckers, were moving on the roads. Every other set of wheels was either drowned, wouldn't start, wouldn't run, or was waiting for a tow truck.
Yeah.
The hero of our puzzler was a guy with a Morris Minor. Remember the Morris Minor?
I do.
It was kind of a great grandfather of the modern Mini, which is a very popular car now. Well, anyway, our hero pedaled around on his bicycle, and eventually he found his Morris Minor looking as drenched as all the rest of the cars, but at least it had four tires that were on the pavement. He tried to start the engine unsuccessfully. It cranked but wouldn't fire up. He opened the hood, and then with the tools that he had in the trunk and those he had in his bicycle, he managed to remove the spark plugs. They were soaked with gasoline. He took off the distributor cap, and he realized why. It was full of water, and he knew he was done for. It wasn't going to start. And then, an inspiration. And in less than 10 seconds, unaided and using only what he had in the trunk of his car and on his bicycle, he began and then subsequently completed a drive across the Cape Cod Peninsula. And the question is, how did he do it? Well, the first thing I guess you needed to know is that Morris Minors of this vintage were all stick shift cars.
Of course.
And as such, I guess I gave a big hint when I said he had removed the spark plugs. Mm-hmm. He removed the spark plugs and he didn't put them back in.
He didn't.
No. And what he did, in fact, was he drove his Morris Minor as if it were an electric car, using the starter motor and the battery, which still worked, even though they were submerged. He turned the key and actually shifted up through the gear. So as he got moving, he went from first to second to third. When he came to hills, of course, he would use the opportunity to coast.
Sure.
Would he not?
Of course.
Put it neutral and coast. And when he came to uphills that were difficult, he would downshift where necessary. And in fact, considering how big the starter motor and the battery are in this little thing and how small the car is, he was able to drive all the way across the peninsula. Pretty cute, huh? So who's our winner this week?
Very good. Very good. The winner this week is Jesse Dornstreich.
Dornstreich.
From Philadelphia, PA. And for having his answer, Jesse could be either his or her answer, selected at random from among all the correct answers, Jesse's going to get a $25 gift certificate to the Car Talk Shameless Commerce Division, with which he or she can buy any of the returned Car Talk merchandise now flooding in from disappointed listeners across the country.
At half price.
At price. What a deal. $50 worth of stuff for a $25 gift certificate. Jesse, you're a lucky person.
Devil. Anyway, we'll have a new non-automotive, interesting puzzler coming up in the third half of today's show. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, you can call us and ask us any question you'd like about your car, a neighbor's car, or anything
or
else.
Or quantum mechanics.
Yes.
I'm into that lately.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
My name is Christine Sigurdsson.
Hi, Christine.
Christine.
Yeah.
Where are you from, Christine?
Michigan.
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 Yeah.
But.
So what's up?
Well, we've got a car that has been wrecked this last summer and fixed at a shop that we sort of trusted and then discovered we shouldn't have. And there were a lot of things that weren't done when we got it back, and so things have kind of been cropping up one by one.
What happened to the car? It got hit by something or
took it and she hit a post, quite a large post.
A girl stole it? She stole the car?
Well, we were gone for the summer. We left the keys and told her to look after the house and
okay.
Bad choice. But anyway, it's a front wheel drive, it's a Honda Prelude.
So she hit like a telephone pole, a big pole?
It was not quite that big around and pretty short, but it was a very,
very
deep. Like almost a foot in diameter. It was a large pole.
And she hit it head-on or sideways?
With the corner, the driver's front corner.
Yeah.
Got it.
An offset crash.
Right. She damaged an axle bearing up there.
Okay.
And then it swung her around so that her driver's side back wheel hit the other part of the fence, the next post down. Buckled.
It folded that wheel underneath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you do with an omelet.
Broke the ball joint.
Folded it right in.
Yeah.
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 So we got a broken axle on one side, and we got a broken ball joint and discs and stuff like that on the other side.
Yeah, we've had everything fixed, we think. We had the strut replaced. There was a stabilizer bar in the back that we had straightened. And all this stuff seems to be fine, but we kind of get a vibrating light bouncing when you're driving down the road. And it mostly is recognizable between 25-35 miles an hour. And then when you get up to high speeds, if you hit any bump in the road or a little pothole or something, the back end will shimmy back behind you. It'll kind of pop over to the one side. And that just worries me. In Michigan, we have a lot of ice, and I don't want to hit ice on this thing. I don't know what it'll do.
Yeah.
Is it worth throwing more money after it to figure out what this is and what in the world could it be?
Well, what is it?
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, it could be an alignment problem.
Okay.
Could be bad tires, if we were lucky.
Can we go back a couple of steps?
Uh-huh, sure.
Yeah,
Christine with a K?
Yeah.
No, you went back too far. That was way back.
Way back. Yeah. I think when all this happened, you threw the rear end alignment way out. I suspect they've never gotten it right, and they maybe can't. Because
the
frame is in the shape now of a parallelogram.
Okay.
And so you need to back into something real hard.
Okay.
No, the frame can be straightened. It may be difficult or it may be impossible. I mean, sometimes it can't be done.
Okay.
You need to, at the very least, go someplace and have them check the four-wheel alignment of this car. And what I suspect you're going to find out is that it's way out.
Okay.
And it's way out because of the accident, and it may require frame straightening. And if you can get it straightened, you can get it aligned, and then you can replace the tire that got damaged because the alignment's been so far out.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it handles funny because the wheels are not all going in the same direction.
What did I say?
Okay.
Alignment and tires. Isn't that what I said?
I wasn't really listening.
I knew you weren't. I knew you weren't listening.
See you, Christine.
Okay, thanks so much.
Good luck.
Bye.
All right. Do you know what it's time for?
Time to strap the snowplow onto your MG?
No. It's time to play Stump the Chumps! It is time once again to bring back a previous caller and find out what happened when our advice was implemented in a real life situation.
Why do I always feel queasy when this segment comes up?
It's still all the visions of trial lawyers dancing in your head. Anyway, who is today's contestant?
Well, it's someone named John from Buffalo, New York, and John called in February when his wife wanted to take a cross-country trip with her best friend.
That's a year ago.
Sort of a Thelma and Louise kind of thing, you know? They wanted to go from Buffalo to San Diego in an 87 VW Cabriolet, and John wanted to know if this was a good idea.
Yeah, I think we said, sure, as long as you don't ever want to see your wife again, because once she sees San Diego, good luck ever getting her back to Buffalo.
Actually, I think we suggested that she go for it, provided that she not do it in one non-stop trip. John argued that she should just go nonstop, hoping to get there before the car had time to break down.
Good thinking, John. We suggested just the opposite, that she make short trips and stop and let the car and the drivers rest frequently. I would do it like in 1 hour spurts. You know, like Schenectady. Oh, that's the wrong direction. Yeah, I mean, I would try to go for an hour and get a motel and rest up for and stay overnight, watch a little TV, go another hour the next day.
Okay.
So if she followed your advice, she's probably around Enid, Oklahoma, right about now. John, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, John, before you tell us what actually happened, we have to make sure that you're not being paid off to make us look bad.
Well, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and more or less nothing but the truth?
More or less.
All right. The first thing we need to know is, did she take our advice and go slow, or did she take your advice and try to go nonstop?
Well, and did they make it?
They made it.
Wait a minute. We don't know if we won or not. We don't know if we were right or not. What was their technique?
The technique was, contrary to my advice, they took your advice and they took short, frequent stops, and they drove maybe 3-4 hours at a time, stopped, check out the sights, and then continued on.
Play the music, Dennis!
And they made it from Buffalo to San Diego in that heap, huh?
I can't believe it.
And the Volkswagen is still running, I take it.
No, it died 2 weeks later.
Well, they were quite lucky.
And the reason I ask you guys is because, you know, being a guy, we want to go nonstop just to say we could do it.
Oh, always.
Exactly.
I mean, what's the first thing you ask a guy when he drives along. How long did it take you?
How long did it take you?
I mean, I remember who your buddy, Bill Rota. He drives across the country. Across the country. And finally, after 3 or 4 days of driving, he gets to my brother's house to visit him. The first thing he does is he calls his father because he and his father had rebuilt the engine in his car. He doesn't even say hello to the guy. He just says, "Dad, I burned a half quart."
Bye.
Bye.
Well, thanks for playing Stump the Chumps, John. You've been a good
guys.
Sport.
Thanks for listening. So long. Say hello to your wife.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. If you hear someone you'd like us to bring back for Stump the Chumps, email us your suggestions from cartalk.com.
Or if you can't wait, you can call right now and stump us. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Samantha, and I'm calling from Juneau, Alaska.
Samantha.
What's going on in Juneau today?
Well, I have a debate that I need you to help me settle with my husband.
Yeah.
Actually, and it's that where you should hang your dry cleaning in your car.
Which one of you lured the other one up there?
Actually, it's kind of weird because we met here, but we actually both are originally from Massachusetts.
Really?
Which one of you was running from the law? And
as
why
far as
Juneau?
I mean, neither of us.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been Honolulu, right?
Yeah, that, at this point, with the weather today, I kind of wish it was, but...
So where do you hang your dry cleaning?
You hang it in the...
Yeah, because, you have a blind spot, and I think you should hang it behind your passenger seat so that you don't block your blind spot when you're changing lanes.
The passenger seat? No, behind the driver's seat.
That's where I would put mine if I had any dry cleaning, but the wardrobe I have barely requires cleaning. I have a wear and throw.
I mean, how you can't even see out the window that's right behind you.
But don't you turn around when you're changing lanes, like to go into the left lane to pass?
What, your
somebody?
Neck turns around 180 degrees?
Were you Charlie McCarthy?
You can't see out of that back window. Is that the window that your husband says you put?
He thinks that you should put it behind the driver's seat, but...
Well, of course he's right.
Oh, damn. What's riding on this? Come on. If you want to pay us off, we can change our answer. We can
I
be
think,
bought easily.
Oh, dear.
Well, see, we may misunderstand something. You think you should put it in the back seat behind the passenger seat. Now, isn't that so obviously blocking your view out that window? I mean, you can turn your head only 90 degrees and see right out that window at somebody coming up on your right. But you're hard-pressed to look out the window that's right behind you on the left.
Isn't
that true?
Wait a minute. What kind of a car is this?
It's a Subaru Legacy.
It's just a car.
It's a station wagon.
See, I mean, I hate... Especially considering the consequences of this whole discussion here, to agree with my brother, because who knows what it'll be like when I go home. But I think that I would want to put the stuff and block that window. I mean, it's quite to be quite honest, the place I'd rather put the stuff is to lie it down in the back. Yeah, I mean, that would be a compromise, but it wouldn't be dealing with the issue.
Yeah, I mean, that's just avoiding the issue.
Yeah.
And that's probably the safest thing to do in a lot of cases when you disagree with your wife.
So to put it just in the back seat?
No, to hide. Make believe you didn't hear her, or just do what she says and forget about it.
But you know, when I change lanes, it's always more difficult to go from whatever lane I'm in to the right lane.
Yeah.
Because for whatever reason, you're farther away from the traffic. And it's harder to change because the blind spot seems to be a little bit more difficult to figure out there.
Huh.
And in fact, I think we have a thing on our website which explains how to adjust your mirrors so that you don't have a blind spot. Imagine if you didn't, if you were driving a panel truck,
yeah,
you know, where you just had
no windows,
a windshield.
Oh, yeah,
and
you didn't have any.
And,
okay.
And a window on each of the front doors and no other windows, including the back.
Yeah.
You'd have to rely solely on
the mirrors.
The mirrors. And I think more people ought to learn how to drive with just the mirrors.
Really? See, I got in trouble when I took my driving test for using my mirrors too much.
Well, I mean, I think what you should do is hang some dry cleaning in this place behind you and go off for a drive and see if, in fact, the stuff that's hanging there ever impedes your vision And I'll bet you, you never look out that window. I'll bet you can't even turn your neck that far.
So you're agreeing with my husband.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Sam. Don't sound so downtrodden.
I was really hoping to, you know, prove my point. But, oh, that's all right. Thanks a lot, anyway.
No, thanks a lot. Boy. Oh, you're sorry you called us, now, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
See you, Samantha.
Thanks, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Tommy, look, it's time for us to take a little break.
I know. You have to put the finishing touches on that new puzzle, don't you?
Well, if you consider the question and the answer, the finishing touches, then, well, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And that's, I guess that's all that's left to do.
Great. We'll be back in a minute.
We take our van when we go for a ride. It's a full-blown Astro with a lift on the side. There's just one thing missing. One thing to get, we need a puppy on board, we need a little white pet. One of those dogs with a great disposition, one of those dogs would be a stellar addition. We need a Bichon Frise,
Bichon.
We need a Bichon.
And even though Scott Simon makes a note to start working on his unicycle act again whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the Walton Family Foundation, where opportunity takes root. More information is available at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air from WHYY and NPR. We do long-form interviews with journalists breaking the big news stories and with the authors, filmmakers, and musicians behind the best in pop culture. So listen and subscribe.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Collect, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new puzzler.
New? Okay.
You paying attention?
Yes.
Because you're participating.
Yeah.
You didn't know it yet, but you
okay,
are.
Okay, I will. What do I have to do?
Oh, figure this out.
Okay.
We're going to play a little card game. I'm going to deal out 21 cards, you know, out of an ordinary deck of cards.
Go.
In fact, there could be 3x5 cards. It hardly matters. There are going to be 21 cards on the table in front of us. Mm-hmm. And we're going to alternate taking cards from the pile. You can take cards and I can take cards. And here are the rules. You can take as many as 3 cards,
mm-hmm.
but you must take at least 1 card from the pile whenever you remove cards from the pile.
Right.
So you can take
one, two, or three
cards.
Yeah.
Okay? And those are the only choices you have. And the winner of the game will be determined by who picks up the last card or cards from the table. For example, if there are 6 cards left and I pick up 3 of them,
mm-hmm.
you will pick up the last 3 because we're going to alternate turns.
And I would win.
And you would win. So clearly, if there were 6 cards left, I wouldn't take 3, right?
Right.
The question is there a strategy that
of
you
course.
Could that you could use that would guarantee that you would win? Or is it like tic-tac-toe? Is the best you can do is hope for a tie?
So and there if are there 21 is a, cards.
There are 21 cards.
And I go first?
I'm going to ask you, do you want to go first? Or do you want to go second?
Oh.
So that's the question. Do you want to go first or do you want to go second?
And what are you going to do?
And then what the heck are you going to do? Got it?
Pretty simple game.
Simple. If you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or on the back of a $26 bill and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
Matt 02238, or you can email your answer to us from cartalk.com. But right now, call us. We can't wait. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Tony over in Milanville, Pennsylvania.
Where, Pennsylvania?
Milanville. Yeah.
I'm sure you heard
of that one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
Milanville. Which end of Pennsylvania is that?
That's right on the Delaware River.
That's on the...
Across from New York State.
Oh, so that's in the right end of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's up, Tony?
Well, I got a 89 Dodge van that burns gas something crazy.
Burns gas? Yeah.
It's got about 120,000 on it.
This a real van or a minivan?
It's the real, the 150, the 318 engine.
Oh, the real van, yeah.
The big guy.
Yeah.
And my mechanic on here, we've been working on it. And we changed the catalytic converter.
Oh, good.
And that cleared it up. Mm-hmm. It lasted about 2 months, and it started again.
It cleared up the high fuel consumption?
Yep, it cleared it right up.
How high are we
talking
here?
Well, I'm down about, I'd say, 8-9 miles a gallon.
Yeah, but you never got more. Let's be truthful here. You never got more than, like, 16.
Yeah, I think a little better than that.
Yeah? All right. Excellent. We'll give you 17. So it's down to...
Yeah.
So it's half of what it used to be.
Half of what it used to be.
Yeah, and it burns black.
Are you driving twice as far?
No.
Oh. No. Because that would explain it.
Yeah, it sure would. I get cloud black smoke out of it.
Okay. So, and you say it's blowing black smoke out pipe?
Yeah.
So you've changed the catalytic converter, and what else have you done?
We changed the map sensor.
Oh, okay.
And that cleared it up.
Really?
But I've noticed that every time it did this, if you drive it along and you punch it in passing gear,
black smoke.
It starts doing it right away, and it just keeps burning.
So every time you floor it,
you destroy
whatever fix. Wow, maybe you just have to keep replacing stuff. And, you know, maybe it just wants attention.
I don't know.
I mean, does he have any basis for replacing any of this stuff, or is this just like a dartboard methodology?
No, he's reading the computer, the onboard computer.
Oh, so he's tapped in. He's got his scanner on this.
Well, they got that, what do you call on the, you turn the key.
Oh, yeah. So he's just getting the flashes on the dash.
He gets the flashes on the dash. And all they come up with is running rich, and it's a map sensor.
Well, see, if the map sensor's bad, it could make the catalytic converter get plugged up because it could make the engine run too rich.
Yeah, right.
And it could ruin the catalytic converter, create too much back pressure, diminish your power, and cut down the mileage.
Yeah, yeah.
So I could see where replacing the catalytic converter would have helped. But if the underlying cause were not addressed, then the problem would come back.
And the map sensor could very well have been the underlying cause, but... Evidently not.
No, evidently not, because like I said, we changed it and ran it for a while, and it won't quit. It just...
Until you floored it.
Yeah.
Well, the catalytic converter could not have caused this problem.
No, it was the result of this problem.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I'll tell you, we have had instances with Dodge and other Chrysler products where we have had a rash of bad map sensors.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, so it's possible that you have a bad map, you bought a bad map sensor.
Yeah, but he changed that again. In other words, he put one in just to see what it would do.
Right.
And it didn't clear it up.
It didn't.
No. Not at all.
Boy, Tony, this is good. This is excellent.
No, it isn't good. We don't know the answer. I'm leaning toward something, however.
You are?
Yeah.
That wall.
Fall over. I'm leaning toward it being the computer itself.
The main computer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the Vermont computer, whichever one you
want. Yeah, well,
the main frame.
and I'm also leaning toward the fact that it may be overcharging, the charging system. Maybe, and that may be affecting the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, how did you jump onto that? I like it.
Well, the flooring the gas pedal. Getting the revs up so high that it's possible.
My brother has again shown that he is a brilliant diagnostician. That's excellent.
Well, it's probably wrong.
No, but it's so good. I mean, I kept thinking that the flooring of it was causing some kind of excess fuel problem, and you leapt right onto overcharging.
Stumbled is more like it.
Stumbled. That was excellent.
Well, I
like it.
I would have him first check the charging system to make sure that it's not, especially at high revs, not putting out too much voltage.
Uh-huh.
You know, it shouldn't be over like 15 volts.
Yeah.
And we've had situations where, you know, you see 17, 18 volts and the car still runs okay. But it could be that this thing is somehow making the computer then go haywire.
Oof. Wow.
And it may be that there's nothing wrong with the computer. It may be just fixing this problem would fix the whole thing.
Yeah.
Tell him to check the voltage output of the alternator at high revs, and if it's over 14.8 volts, then something might be amiss.
Well, I would suggest then the voltage regulator is faulty, and you might try changing that, and that might fix it.
Huh.
Good luck, Tony.
Very good.
You're going to need it. See you later.
Thanks much.
Frank, that was very, very good.
Huh?
The way all the little pieces that seem to be...
Disconnected.
Disconnected, man. You've put them all together in one harebrained theory.
But it sounded so good for a minute there.
Man.
It's a good thing we didn't keep Tony on the line any longer.
Because he
would have said, holes would start showing up.
Well, he would have remembered that they had just replaced the alternator.
If he calls back, we're not here. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kim from Washington State.
Hi.
How are you?
What's the city that you want to divulge?
Tacoma.
So what's up, Kim?
Well, I've listened to you guys enough to know that you're great marriage counselors.
Ah. Yes, indeed.
And so what I need to know, this has to do with cars, trust me. I need to know who was more stupid, me or my husband.
Uh-oh. Uh-huh. We don't use words like that, Kim.
Oh, you don't?
No.
How about idiot?
we'll get to that. You go ahead and tell us the problem, and we'll tell you the proper method of communication, because we've been in therapy on this for a long time.
I knew I was
trying to learn the lingo, you know what I mean? And the words moron and stupid are to be eschewed.
Okay,
go ahead. Great. Give us the story.
My husband.
That moron. I'll put it in the parentheses.
Right, he'll put in the parentheticals.
So the words don't come out of your mouth. My husband, that moron.
My husband, that blank.
Yeah.
Okay. He found a Lexus that was abandoned at the airport.
Oh.
And he decided, it was there for 3 years. I saw it too. Every time we flew out, there's that Lexus.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon it's got grass growing around it. It has a boot on it, you know, so nobody can steal it, right?
Really?
So he decides he has to have it, so he purchases the Lexus.
From whom?
From the bank.
Uh-huh.
Because the guy that abandoned it never made a payment on it and quit paying the airport.
Okay, so he owed the bank $22,000, and the parking lot, he owed them $19,500.
Okay. And they made a deal.
All right.
Right. They made a deal. But I was concerned about the car because of what he found in the car.
Mm.
What he found was bolt cutters and shoe covers and one of those key punch things, you know, that you punch out the lock of a car.
Oh. Yes.
And he found the dome light was disconnected, and then the lights on the doors were taped over.
So whoever was using this car was using it to in some nefarious enterprise.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm feeling like we need to go in witness protection.
So does he have this car now?
Oh, God, yes, he has the car.
Did he get it running?
Of course.
It's running.
And it runs well.
It runs well.
But you're worried that it has...
I want it out of our sight.
Yeah, it has dragon tracks, as the Chinese say.
Yeah, it's just got bad vibes.
You ain't just...
Well, how much did he pay for it, all told?
Well, see, here's where you guys are going to think that he's not so dumb. He paid $4,000 for it.
He's a genius!
Really? Between the bank and the parking place and getting the boot removed? What a deal. The guy's a genius.
Oh, shoot.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, Kim, before you go on, that this is every guy's dream.
Oh, God.
It is. I mean, there's nothing better. I mean, I guess women don't respond to this like guys do, but there's something euphoric about getting something for nothing. I mean, he practically got the car for nothing.
Oh,
and men are somehow susceptible to these, you won't believe this, you know, the too good to be true thing. I mean, there were years and years and years in which guys would show up at kinds of auctions, government auctions,
right,
where they were expecting to get a complete Jeep.
Albeit in pieces.
In a crate for $50,
right,
left over,
right,
from World War II. And
when those ran out, they were going to sell them the Jeeps from World War I.
And you can't believe the millions of men who showed up for these things because they believed this to be true.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first Million Man March, actually.
They were all going to was it the government? It was the post office, because someone had mailed a few hundred thousand of these Jeeps in crates.
It's no surprise that your husband succumbed to the lure of this Lexus. He couldn't help himself because in his mind, this was the Jeep that he never got when he was 17.
He became quite upset.
So yeah. I hope you can understand it in that context.
Okay.
That doesn't mean he is not a moron.
Yeah.
But it's almost redundant to call him a moron because he's a guy.
There you go. I thought this was
going to
be easy.
Yeah, no.
No, no. But I do agree with you that there are certain dragon tracks associated with this car.
Yeah.
But you may be able to visit someone to get them removed.
The dragon tracks.
Yeah.
He had it detailed last.
I don't think detailers do that. Yeah, they do your white walls and the dragon tracks.
Dragon tracks, that's a different department.
I'm afraid to tell you what I did because now you're going to say I'm a complete idiot.
Oh.
I haven't even told you my part.
Go ahead.
What I bought.
Oh.
I know what you bought. You bought the whole Ginsu knife set.
No, it's not that dumb.
My wife did the same thing.
He goes into the garage and he glances over at what I bought, and then I have no argument.
Oh, you bought a car?
Yeah.
I got it.
Okay.
A Hummer.
No. I bought a 1966 Volkswagen camper van.
Oh, man.
Well, look, if you dump this guy, call us. We'll marry you.
Oh, you are so
clever. Those are cool.
Was it in great shape?
It's in perfect shape.
Oh,
it's
man.
Beautiful.
I have to say, I came very, very close recently to buying one.
Yeah.
And he also came very close at the same time to being divorced.
Yeah, well.
Again.
Yeah.
But enjoy. Well, I don't think, I mean, I certainly side with you on your move. I think you did a wise thing.
Yeah.
Drive it carefully because it's a dangerous vehicle.
But
as you use it judiciously.
I do.
And you wear an NFL-approved football helmet when you drive it, and knee pads, you'll be all right.
Well, in answer to my question, then.
What was the question? Was there a question?
Who was the stupidest?
Oh, he was, obviously, because he just bought a Lexus. You bought a legend.
Oh, I love that line. That's worth needle points.
Kim, it's been a pleasure talking to you for the last 45 minutes. And maybe we can do this again sometime.
Thank you.
See you later.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Well, she made my day.
Well, it's happened again. You vaporized another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive. Bongo Boy. We just can't shake that Bongo Boy image.
It's so perfect.
Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Cavs of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mayor, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Risman. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Sunset Strip, Mocha Chip, Honey Dip, French Drip, Steak Tip, Prune Whip, Burger Flip, Letter Rip, Schmooze and Sip, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our director of guaranteed repeat business is Lucinda Bolts. Our investment management company is Poor Lee Endowed. Our beatnik philosopher is Harry Reasoner. Our head of public relations is Deb Bakel. Our PowerPoint producer is Boris Tadef. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. And the head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the meter maids with a vendetta in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappan Brothers. And of course, don't drive like my brother.
And of course, don't drive like my brother.
Sounds like an echo. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 2001. Wow! Break your first New Year's resolution by subscribing to our weekly podcast and check out our clothing and best of collections all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, are you looking for a good mechanic? Well, you could go down to the marina and see who has the biggest boat, or you can check out reviews of mechanics that other Car Talk listeners use and like at our mechanics files. You can search by zip code, specialty, or number of bunks in the guy's cabin cruiser. Check out the mechanics files anytime over at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though all the other land masses start to inch away from the North American plate whenever we say it, this is NPR.